Hey everyone, it's Monday, which means one thing. It's time for Get to Know Night, that weekly show where you ask me questions and I give you answers to the best of my ability. We have, as always, tons of questions, so I'm just going to jump right into it. The first question is from Anonymous. They ask, what is something you wish you had done differently in your early 20s or your early young adult days? I think, honestly, I don't think I would have done anything differently. And that's not because I lived like a perfect like I didn't I don't think my time was perfect. There's definitely a lot of things I could have done better or improved or been could have been different. But one of my friends, this was I don't know how many years ago, but one of my friends, he was like a he's a Buddhist, and he was talking to me. We're talking about like regrets and like things we wish worked out differently, and he was telling me, he's like, man, you shouldn't really have any of these regrets. And I was like, why? I feel like it's natural for everyone to have regrets. He's like, yeah, it's natural to have regrets. But when you talk about your regrets, man, you talk about how you want to change them. And I'm like, yeah, I mean, I would love to go back and do things over again if I could. And he was like, yeah, but you shouldn't want that. And I was like, but why not? It feels like only natural to like want to change these things. And he basically told me, he's like, well, yeah, it's natural to want to change them, but ultimately, like, one of the paths of unhappiness is trying to look back in the past and thinking all the things that could be different. And he's like, instead of looking back in the past and being like, oh, what would you change? Just ask yourself, what did I learn? Like, look at all the moments you wish you could have changed, and then ask yourself, what did you learn? And then, like, see what comes of that. And I was like, okay, I'll try it. And so I did. And I, like, thought back on things. I was like, damn, I wish I didn't do that. I wish this conversation went this way or that way. I'm like, did I learn anything from these moments? And most often, I'd be like, yeah, I guess I did. Either about myself or about other people or just in general. Like, I just learned stuff through, like, examining it. And I was like, oh, okay. So since then, I've been trying my hardest to, like, not look back and be like, oh, man, I wish I did that. Or because there's a million things. Like, I wish I invested in Amazon or, like, Apple. Like, I wish, you know, like, I wish I made a bunch of different choices like that. Like, I wish I took Bitcoin more seriously. Like, I don't know. Like, there's always those going to be those kind of things. But like you can't harp on those things. You gotta just kind of let them go and just be like, well, you know, it is what it is. Sorry for my non-answer. But yeah, that is my answer. Thank you for your question though. I really appreciate it. The next question is from, Anonymous. They say, okay, oh my God, I don't know if you're an emo guy when you're young, but we millennials are pretty shocked and stoked right now knowing there's a concert called When We Were Young in Vegas, and the lineup is so good. Okay, I know, yeah. So there's this concert in Vegas called When We Were Young, which is, like, headlining a bunch of people from, like, the 2000s and 90s, like MCR, Jimmy Eat World, Dashboard Confessional. There's, like, a bunch of acts that I probably very much know. The question is basically what I want to go. Are you interested in attending? Yes, but caveat, I don't know how legit the concert is, because I don't know, some of those bands aren't touring anymore, like, at all, which is kind of weird. I'm like, are they going to come back together for the tour or for the festival, which I don't know. And some of them had really bad breakups, so I'm like, I'd be shocked if these people come together to perform. So we'll see, but at this moment I'm sus, but if it is legit, I would love to go, but right now I am pretty suspicious of the whole thing, because it just looks too good to be true. And sometimes when things are like that good to be true, you gotta be like, So, the next question is, have you ever been to a music concert festival? What was the last music concert / festival you attended? Yeah, I've been to a lot of them. Like EDC, Ultra, Electric Zoo, Beyond Wonderland, Sensation White in the Netherlands. And then, like, yeah, I was a big EDM kid, so I went to a lot of big EDM, like, concerts and festivals and stuff. Last one I went to is so long ago. I don't know. Probably, what was the last one? I didn't go to, I haven't been to any Ultras recently. I think EDC Vegas was the last one I think. Was that 2018? I'm not sure. I think EDC Vegas was the last one, last concert I went to. I haven't been to concerts in the pandemic, so I haven't really been out. But EDC Vegas was the last time I was at like a big festival, and that was really fun. My festival days have kind of declined, which has been such a bummer. I used to be at festivals all the time when I was younger, but I haven't been able to. I haven't been going to as frequently as I used to when I was in my younger years, so which is a shame, because it was a lot of fun. But hopefully festivals and stuff will come back. Hopefully things will get better and there'll be big festivals again. Thank you for your question. I really appreciate it. I'm always a big fan of music fests. I think they're wonderful experiences, and I think if you are a fan of a certain genre of music, you should definitely go to find a fest of that genre, because you really meet people that are of similar wavelength. And I don't know, I think all my experiences going to music festivals have been so formative, and I'm pretty grateful to have them, because I think they really, I don't know, they really helped me like open up and really come out of my shell. So I'm pretty grateful for that. Thank you for your question. The next question is from Mimosa. They ask, are you in an apartment or a house? I'm in an apartment because the housing market sucks. Yeah, I've been in an apartment for, I don't know, I've been in an apartment for a while. Yeah, I feel like apartment living isn't terrible. It's not bad. The only thing that sucks is the neighbors. That's the only gripe I have. But sure, that I dig living in an apartment. It's nice. So, but when the market gets better, I'm definitely gonna start looking for a house, because I'd love to have a house, but right now living in an apartment. Thank you for your question, Mimosa. The next question is from Anonymous. They say, hello, Knight. How do you record your sleeping audios? Like, do you actually fall asleep in your bed? Where do you put the mic? So there's a few different ways I've tried sleeping audios. Funnily enough, most of the times I don't try to fall asleep. But more often than not, I will fall asleep because I'm just laying in bed next to the microphone and I'm just very comfortable, and I will sometimes just fall asleep and I'll be like, oh, well, and then I wake up hours later and I'm like, oh shit, well, there's a sleeping audio. Yeah, funnily enough, I don't think I've ever tried to fall asleep in a sleeping audio. I have just organically fallen asleep just because I'm just laying there with my eyes closed, like breathing. And I don't know if any of you have tried to just sit softly for an hour concentrating on your breathing, but you will fall asleep eventually. So yeah, so I just typically just pass out, and then I'm just like, oh, fuck it, I'll just record it. I'll keep it in, yeah. So yeah, a lot of it's organic, me sleeping. So yeah. And the microphone, I put it in a few different places. Sometimes it's on my bedside table. I've had it in bed with me, where my partner would sleep, but that, I don't know, the sound didn't come out so great. Just because of like the pillow sound, it just rubbed against the mic too much. But I mean, I've tried different configurations to see what sounds best. So far, either me holding it or me having it on the nightstand is the two best places for sleep audio so far. But I enjoy doing them. I just wish I didn't fall asleep every time I recorded one. But yeah, thank you for your question. Let's see. Anonymous asks, how's the man bun situation right now? How long is your beard right now? And do you have any plan for a clean shave? Thanks. The man bun is out of control. Like, it's so man bunny. Every day I'm just like, I need to cut my hair. It's kind of getting to that point where I'm just, I mean, I think I've been at that point for a while. I've been at the point where I'm just kind of over my hair for the last couple months. I just need to grow a little bit longer so I can donate it. I just want to donate it. I just want to donate it and also have some length. So it's a catch 22. I think it's long enough. I could just donate it, but it would be so short afterwards. I want a little bit of length, so I'm going to let it grow a little bit longer. I'm going to suck it up for maybe another month or so, and then I'll cut it and then give it away for charity, because I really want to. The beard situation is, I don't know if you can hear it, it's pretty long. It's a pretty serious beard going on right now. I don't think I might shave it. If it gets too long for me to wear a mask over it, I'm gonna have to shave it. It's not there yet, but it's getting close. So once it's a little bit too big for me to wear a mask over it, I usually shave it clean. But that's now the only restricting factor to my beard, is like masks. But yeah. So maybe in like 2 weeks I'll shave it. That's what I'm feeling. Maybe about 2 weeks. Yeah, it isn't. It hasn't driven me crazy yet. When it drives me crazy, that's usually when I shave it. So. Thank you for your question. Let's see. Is there going to be any more Bodyguard audios? Yes. I don't know when. Probably before the end of this month. I hope I'll have one more out. Yeah, because right now he's still in Russia with her. Yeah, they haven't left Russia yet, have they? Let me see. Yeah, I guess we have two. You have two more. I guess there's three more left in the series, to be honest. So, I don't know on the next one. I think the next one probably, I'll try to get it out by the end of this month. But there's basically probably about three more episodes left in Bodyguard before it wraps. It's getting close. It's getting close. I need to also get back to the superhero series. It needs to actually start, because I've been kind of spinning my wheels on it. I'll be the first one to admit that. So I kind of want to jump into it. I have this Mr. and Mrs. Smith thing planned on the back burner. So we'll see if that comes into circulation at any point. There's a few series that have been popping around. So we'll see. We'll see. But Bodyguard, yes, it will finish. I want to finish it. It has three episodes left. It'll finish soon. So maybe four, possibly, if I do a prologue, or not a prologue, an epilogue. But we'll see. But that's future me problems. Alrighty. Kelsey asks, do you have any piercings? I have 16 piercings and a lot of tattoos, and I'm always interested in knowing if someone has piercings. I don't have piercings. I've had one piercing in my entire life, and that was an ear piercing, and it was a mistake. Besides that, I have not got pierced again. Yeah. I was convinced in high school. Oh, it was younger. I was in middle school. Oh my god, that's embarrassing. I was in middle school, and my friends went to get all of us got our ears pierced together. Which, yeah, it was bad. It was bad. It was a mistake. I immediately took it out and I let it close up. I regretted it so hard. I think on stream people asked, "What's an embarrassing story?" I think that's an embarrassing story. I got my ear pierced when I was in middle school. I don't agree with my choices. It didn't look good. It looked so bad. There are guys who can pull off the earring. I could not pull that off, especially not as a middle schooler. and my parents didn't know about it, so I took it out before I got home because I don't want my mom to know. It was a whole thing. It was a real kerfuffle. But yeah, no. No more piercing since then. I think I was traumatized. Just from the whole ordeal. let's see. Anonymous asks, what's your favorite Billie Eilish song? I mean, in a vacuum, I really like the lyrics to Happily, or Happier Than Ever, now that I, really know them. They're really good. Yeah. That's probably my answer. Or Ocean Eyes. Ocean Eyes is really good. I like Ocean Eyes a lot. Yeah, one of the two. Let's see. Anonymous asks, hey Kay, how are you? I'm doing pretty good. My question is, how do you tell your partner about your anxiety? Or how do you want to be told about your partner's anxiety? Some people don't know how to handle a person with anxiety. I'm the type who hides it in fear of being judged. All right. Well, one, you shouldn't be afraid of being judged for having anxiety. I feel like a lot of people have anxiety. I think most people have anxiety. I have anxiety. I feel like everyone has... It's a sliding scale, you know? There are people who have very little anxiety in their lives, and there are people with a lot of anxiety in their life. But I don't think anyone lives an anxiety-free life. So, I think you should be honest as soon as possible. And if your partner is like, oh, I can't deal with that, then that's a really good sign that they just weren't for you. And I know that sucks, because you're like, but I really like them. But at the same time, if they just weren't going to be that person that you needed them to be, it didn't matter how much you liked them, because they just weren't going to, eventually they were going to disappoint you, because they weren't going to be able to fulfill the need that you're gonna have. And some people just won't be able to, and that's fine. But I think anyone that will be really good for you should be able to hear, hey, I'm anxious about these things. And instead of being like, oh, that's a lot, be like, oh, okay, let's talk about it. What's going on? Let's understand. And like, if that's a response you get, then you're like, oh, that's a really good sign, you know? So it's almost like a red flag gauge you can use it as. You can be like, when you tell a potential partner, be like, hey, these are the things I have. Their response should be really telling about like the kind of character, or like who to expect out of the, like what to expect out of them, basically. And then the how, I think you could just kind of, I think you can, you're under no obligation to tell them like in the first date or like the first, like you don't need to like be like on the first date, be like, I have all these anxieties, these are the things. Like you can, I think you're within your right to like, you know, date for a little bit, like date for like a couple months, and if they come up organically, then let them come up organically. Like if there's something that you're like, oh, if that triggers my anxiety, tell him, see how he reacts. I think if I was being told about someone's anxiety, I think the best way to understand it would be in the, like, let's say you're anxious about thunder and rain, or storms made you anxious, and we were together and then there was like a thunderstorm and you're like, oh my god, this is really triggering my anxiety. That'd be a great way of like bringing it up, because I'd be like, oh, what about the thunderstorm? And like, we could talk about it. It's active. Like, I can console you about it. Like, I could, you know, it's, that might be a good way of going about it. Or conversely, you can pick a time when it's not happening. So you're not under the pressure of having one of a trigger while explaining what are your triggers, basically. Because I know that can be very hard. But it can also be very helpful, because being like, hey, I'm being triggered right now, this is what happens, and like letting someone see it. There's no wrong way of going about this. There's no right or wrong way of approaching life. So however you decide to go about expressing this to your partner or potential partner isn't right or wrong. But I think you should express it. I think you should feel safe and comfortable enough to express it. And the fact that, and if you don't feel safe and comfortable enough to express it, that might be a good telling sign about the relationship. You know, like if you feel safe enough to be able to express vulnerabilities, that's a good sign. That means like, oh yeah, we're like developing open and honest communication. Like things are progressing in a positive direction. If you find yourself being like, oh, I don't know if I feel safe enough to expose myself with this. And I mean, maybe like evaluate the person on the other end and be like, oh, what is it? Is it within me? Am I the reason why I don't feel safe? Or is it something are they doing something that's making me feel unsafe? And I don't know. It could be a good way to explore whether things are going, working well or not in a relationship. But at the end of the day, my advice is always, 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 always tell people and be open and honest about it. So I hope that helps. The next and final question is from Ryu. They ask, so I've listened to one of your old audios called You Comforting Me in 2019. You have no idea how much I love that audio and how it's helped me. I don't know if I can explain it, but I have a question. You mentioned something like staring at a blank page with the narrative, and it scared you. I don't want to be forgotten. And I know you're a writer in real life, and have been experiencing that maybe once. How do you cope with that? Because I've stopped drawing for almost 3 months now because of school. It stresses me out, and I don't want to be forgotten. So yeah, it scares me, to be very honest. I think that's a fear a lot of creative people have, is the fear of being forgotten. I mean, I think it's a fear that almost everyone has. I think it transcends whether you're creative or not. But I think there's something, like there's something more tangible when you're doing creative outlets, because in theory, right, everything we make creatively, like, is some kind of, I don't know, bid for immortality somehow. At least when I was younger, that's how I saw art. I saw art as like this bid for immortality. Like we make sculptures, we build buildings, we write great works, we make great music. We all do this in this like vain hope to not be forgotten. Like with this idea that you only truly die when the last person to utter your name leaves this earth, and then that is the moment when you die. And so, you know, Chopin and Napoleon, they'll live forever, for their name will be uttered into eternity, and thus they'll never actually truly cease to exist. So I think there's like that level of, there's like a little bit of that going on when I used to create things. And I think I had to kind of outgrow it, and it was hard to try to separate this like gnawing desire for like greatness from the thing that I'm doing, because they're not the same. Like the thing that I'm doing could lead to this potentially, but it might not. It, like, at the end of the day, the thing I do has to be for me. And once I learned that lesson, that really helped. Because I think if we approach all art like this is our stamp of who we are for the world to see forever, and this is our only attempt to be known or get validation or recognition or escape like the mortal coil, then art becomes terrifying and it becomes too great to even attempt. Trying things becomes so scary because you're like, oh man, this has so much importance and so much weight now. But then if you pull all that back and you go, okay, why am I doing this? Why am I painting? Why am I writing? What am I doing this really for? And if it comes down to, I'm doing this for me because this makes me happy and something I want to do. And I don't care if no one reads it, or I don't care if a million people read it. I'm going to do it regardless. And if that's the mindset you come at, it becomes a lot easier to do it. Most things are about changing the way we see it, how we perceive it. Because our perception dictates so much about how the world is. The world is because we perceive it, you know? So if we perceive it in a different way, it just is different, you know? So I think that's huge. It's about changing your perception of art, or at least the performance of it. Make drawing not about anything greater than you want to draw. And if you can do that, and I know it's easier said than done. It's so hard to change our perception. Our perception is so solid. It feels like the ground beneath our feet. But just like that ground, it is moving. You can shift your perception. It just takes time, and it takes work, and it takes effort. But you can change your perception. So my suggestion is try to push away all these ideas of work being greater than the moment. Because in the moment, it doesn't matter what happens after. Like, what am I doing right now? I'm drawing for myself. Nothing else matters. If you can get there, then maybe you can tap back into it. At least that helped for my writing. I think a lot of my fear with a lot of stuff I was writing was I was just like, oh my God. One, it was like, oh my God, so many people are going to see this. It's in front of a lot of eyes. I'm stressed. What if it's not good? What if it's not as good as the last thing I've done? There's like all this anxiety, all this fear that you have when you think about the end goal. And then what I had to do was be like, forget all that. Why am I writing? Who am I writing this for? I'm writing this for me. Okay. Write jokes that I think are funny. Write situations I think are funny. Write characters I think are good and that I'm happy with and that I feel okay with. And when I got to that place, it was easier. It wasn't simple. It wasn't like pain-free. It was still hard, but it was easier. And every time I go back to that place, I try to have that mentality. It gets easier. And every time it gets easier. There's this scene in BoJack Horseman I really love. It's a scene where BoJack's trying to better himself. And it's a metaphor of him running up this hill. And every day he tries to run up this hill. He gets like about halfway up and he's just dead. And one day, and every morning you see this monkey running by his house and running up that same hill. But the only difference is BoJack only tries this every so often. Unless, I don't know what, I think it was a season finale. He gets to the top of the hill and he collapses. And the monkey is running and he stops by BoJack. And he tells BoJack, it gets easier. But you gotta do it every day. But it gets easier. That's true. If you want to change something, you gotta be forcing the habit. But the more you do it, it does get easier. So, yeah. I hope that answered your question. I know I rambled a lot about a lot of different things. But if you enjoyed this episode of Get to Know Night, or you have your own question, please feel free to leave it in the doobly-doo down below. If you have a request, please send it over to the request line, which you can search by, I think it's idea request submission is what you can search to find it. Anyway, I've been Night. I hope you have a great rest of your week, and I'll talk to you all later. Bye now.